1039 1450 WKXL NHTalkRadio.com. It is another edition of Feldis and Kale. Our contract was renewed again.
Amazingly.
Truly amazing. Presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And that chuckle in the background belongs to our guest today, a very familiar face. He has a great face for radio and a very familiar voice as well in New Hampshire. And that is Scott Spradling. Scott, welcome to Feldis and Kale.
Hey, thanks a lot, Dan and Ken. I really appreciate it. Looking forward to a chat.
Well, absolutely. We're looking forward to having you on. And, you know, everybody is familiar with you, or most everybody, from your WMUR days. But tell the folks what you're up to now.
Well, I left, believe it or not, it was 13 years ago.
Wow.
So I'm doing basically some consulting work now. Yeah. And I took my Rolodex out of the newsroom. And I try to help basically be a glorified matchmaker if there are folks in business or in the political realm or in the media realm that need help with some type of a project, whether it's crisis management, spreading the good word, helping on some type of marketing program, or maybe moving something through the state house and you need to open some doors. I try to use the relationships I've developed over the years to help others achieve their goal.
And you still do the occasional media work. I know, I hear you all over the airwaves, so...
I do, yeah. You know, every now and again, it draws you back in, right?
Once you've
jumped into that pool, it's hard to climb out. So yeah, every now and again, I'll jump in and substitute for a friend of mine or something like that. And I still have what I feel like is a large extended family of media friends that do their thing every day in New Hampshire.
No doubt about it. And Scott, if people listening wanted to reach out to you and chat with you about some of the services you provide, how would they get in touch with you?
So I think the best way to do it is to just head to the website, spradlinggroup.com, and we've got contact information there. And they can also just hit me up on my email, which is scott@spradlinggroup.com.
There you go.
Can't get much easier than that, right?
But right.
True. And also, Dan, did you know that Scott has a band?
You told me that last a few days ago. I didn't know it. But
yeah.
Scott, what do you play?
So I don't. I'm the singer.
You're the singer. Wow.
Yeah, we have a 10-piece band, and we have a lot of fun. We actually just had a gig at the Palace, and we're a cover band, but we play a really wide variety of tunes. When you've got horn behind you, you can do some old Chicago. You can do some Michael Bublé and Frank Sinatra. But we also like to do stuff from the 70s, 80s, even some contemporary stuff with Bruno Mars. And people don't realize maybe as they're listening to music through the different decades that there's a lot of horns and a lot of different arrangements in music that goes for 50, 60, 70 years. So we love getting on stage. It's a whole bunch of people who all have day jobs, fortunately. This is all hobby level stuff. But we love doing fundraisers. We do weddings. And every now and again, we'll just gig at a performance venue like the Palace Theater in Manchester and just hope to entertain people and give them a toe tap and good time.
Nice. What's the name of your band?
It's the Scott Spradling Band, and before we chuckle too much at that, I was outvoted. I wanted to be a different name, but the guys in the band wanted it to name after me, thinking that people might recognize my name and be interested in coming out.
No doubt about it. Did you have a good crowd at the Palace the other night?
You know, we did, and that's an interesting conversation because Peter, who runs the Palace, a really, really good guy,
Peter Ramsey,
Peter Ramsey.
Yeah.
We're seeing this transition of people coming back to live venues, and what he is seeing so far is I think his place seats about 800. Out of 800 total, he said they're averaging about 300 that are coming to these live venues for shows so far early on.
Yep.
And we had about between 200 and 300 ourselves. So I was thrilled with that number.
Sure.
And he said that kind of fits the average right now as I think all of us start getting more used to the idea of being in close quarters or with large crowds because that's a novelty still at this point. So I anticipate that over the course of the next few months, we will see live venues amping up more and more. In fact, Tim Beckert, who runs the SNU Center in Manchester, is a very good friend of mine.
Yep.
I was talking to him on the phone on something unrelated just the other day, and he was saying that he's anticipating that by mid to late fall, maybe heading into the Thanksgiving holidays, the concerts will start to open back up again at his venue, and he said that he's got a country music concert coming up close to Thanksgiving that's already sold out. Wow. So looking down the line, I think people are more comfortable.
Yeah.
I think this is the summer of getting used to being out.
And you know, Scott, just to plant the seed, we want to get hockey back in Manchester, too. I mean, we love concerts. There's no doubt about that. And we want to get pro hockey back in the Queen City.
Can you work some of that Spradling magic? Yeah. And
I will do everything I can. And I mean, talking to the voice of the Monarchs for all these years, of course, because, Ken, you've led us through many great, fun, prosperous years of pro hockey in Manchester. I'm with you. I would love to see it come back.
I think it's
imminently possible. I really do.
Yeah.
I know Tim would love to have a hockey franchise back again.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I think it's just a matter of just finding that franchise team that we can woo to Manchester.
Yeah, it's not always easy, but it means so much for the downtown in Manchester. It's great to see the concerts come back, but you'd love to have a primary tenant for the building as well, and nothing better than a pro hockey team for 40 or 45 dates for the season. So that would be great. And Scott, I'll tell you, and you know this, I'm just preaching to the choir here, but, you know, if you bring a team back to Manchester, I mean, it's still, to this day, it would be one of the better facilities in either the American Hockey League or the ECHL. I mean, it really would be. So
I agree with you completely. And when you're only a block away from Fisher Cat Stadium, you've got summertime pro baseball happening in Manchester, too. It's a natural extension. And there's a craving here. New England residents are great sports fans. They're loyal. I mean, look at the fan base for the Boston pro sports team.
Yeah.
That love and passion gets extended to NASCAR, like this weekend in Loudoun.
Right.
It gets extended to the hockey. We are a huge hockey region. And there's been great support over these years for Fisher Cats pro baseball in Manchester.
Oh, absolutely.
So I agree with you. The appetite is here.
And how about Vladdy Guerrero Jr., the MVP of the All-Star game, a former Fisher Cat?
I had a chance to see him in a Fisher Cats uniform, and you know, you could just sort of tell, because when he makes contact with the ball, it goes into orbit.
It doesn't
just become a home run.
It
becomes a constellation. This guy's just got nothing but skill, and it's really fun to watch him and to have been able to see his development in the earliest parts of his career.
No doubt about it. Well, don't worry, folks. We are going to talk a little politics, but we're going to take a break. It's Feldis and Kales. Scott Spradling is our guest right here on 103.9 1450 WKXL, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Welcome back, 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldis and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Scott Spradling is our guest, political pundit for a long, long time, used to be at Channel 9. And Scott, in your mind, what is the number one political story in New Hampshire today?
Well, it has to be whether Dan Feltis is running for election for governor.
I would have to agree with that. You know, I don't want to lose my partner, though, here. I don't want to lose my partner.
You know, I guess because Dan's a good guy. He ran a really good campaign last fall. But he is a part of the conversation, in all honesty, that really revolves around what's going to happen with Chris Sununu and with Maggie Hassan. Will they or won't they? Will he or won't he? And that's the big question of the day, and it really ends up being, especially for Republican potential candidates for major races, he's the first domino. His decision will dictate what kind of cascading effect it has in multiple races. So obviously we're talking about whether or not Governor Sununu decides to challenge Senator Hassan next fall in a winner-take-all, national implication kind of a fight between Republicans and Dems over who might be controlling the U.S. Senate going forward. It's that important of a decision. It's that significant of a race. These are both two very strong candidates. We know popularity ratings among the governor right now are very strong. They're stronger than Maggie's popularity ratings in the Senate. But as I've said all along, you have to be very careful not to underestimate the power and campaign prowess of Maggie Hassan. She's a former state senator. She, too, is a former governor. She has a lot of relationships. She has a campaign team around her that's outstanding. So that would be a just clash of the titans kind of a race with big implications. But of course, then it also opens up the possibility of an open seat in the governor's race, which always draws a lot of attention and potentially a crowd.
No, absolutely so. And, you know, whenever Governor Sununu makes his decision or not, you know, it's going to, you know, set off the dominoes, as you said, Scott, and have implications on a number of races down the line, for sure.
You're right.
So you're well connected. When is he going to make that decision?
Well, that is the really big question. He keeps saying publicly it's going to be a, quote, long time from now. But for all pragmatic reasons, it can't be.
Right.
Fundraising requirements for this kind of a race necessitate having to get in sometime soon. So we're in July having this conversation. So it's only, what, 16, 17 months until the actual election. He's going to have to make some kind of announcement early this fall, because it will take that kind of time for him to fundraise and get everything organized on his side of things, just as a mechanical piece. But here's the thing. If he decides he's not going to do that, he needs to be able to step out of the way and allow another Republican to do the exact same exercise, to be able to set up, to put a team together, to get the resources gathered. All of that effort takes time. And we just saw this week that Senator Hassan posted a record second quarter fundraising. She has millions in the bank, and more will be coming her way. Now, let's not kid ourselves, Ken and Dan. This is the kind of race that will attract a lot of outside dollars and outside attention because of the high stakes. But you still, as a candidate, have to do that work to raise the money yourself, put together the team, put together the platform, all of that work. It takes time. So while he's saying it's going to be a long time, I personally think that he can't go too much past September before making a final decision and making it known to everybody what's going to happen. And if he decides not to run, this shifts the entire landscape, depending on what he decides to do, whether he wants to run for re-election, or there is that third option of him not running for anything and taking some time away from elected office. So the entire field is frozen, and a lot of people, and I think a lot of people on both sides of the aisle, are waiting to see exactly what happens. Because as anyone can tell you, and Dan is a perfect example,
yeah,
it's a very different campaign running for an open seat for governor than it is running against an incumbent.
So there
are going to be a lot of people that are going to kick tires on this thing, depending on what Chris decides to do.
No doubt about it. I would add I think that the most salient story right now, and it overlaps with this conversation, is the pretty radical state budget that was just signed, which Speaker of the House Sherman Packard said the most conservative budget in over 50 years, which included the first ever abortion ban 24 weeks or later, mandated intrusive ultrasounds for women seeking any abortion, a banning of discussion of systemic inequality, tax cuts, getting rid of the interest and dividends tax, corporate dividends. And no one on this call, I think, gets corporate dividends. I mean, it's tax cuts for the wealthiest, literally, in big corporations, and vouchers sending public tax dollars to private prep schools and religious schools, and while property taxpayers are holding the bag, cuts to child care, you name it. This budget, Scott and Ken, is, in the words of Sherman Packard, the most conservative in over 50 years, and it is kowtowing to the far right. And that has implications for the thing that I am most concerned about, is the implications on the ground for ordinary folks. However, in the context of the conversation we just had, it has implications too.
I feel like you just sketched the exact playbook that either Senator Hassan will be able to use against Chris Sununu as a fellow Senate candidate, or against Sununu's reelection for governor. That will be the conversation piece. And I think what Sununu will be working to do is trying to remind everybody all the great things that he and his team did during the course of the pandemic to get us into, out of it, and through it. But you're right. There were definitely some issues. Some of those highlighted issues were not the kinds of things he wanted to have in the budget. I mean, he actually made that pretty publicly clear, but he didn't put the fight up to remove it and have a pitched fight against the what they describe as the freedom fighters, the free staters that are in the House, many of whom are in leadership. That fight never happened in front of us. And we all anticipated that it might, because some of those issues, I think, can be particularly damaging to candidate Sununu, especially depending on how it's used by candidates that are running against him, whether it's Maggie or whether it's someone running to challenge him in the race for governor. So you're right. Those are exactly the kinds of issues that Dems and folks that are following this will be using as criticisms of what he's done in this last two-year term to defeat him.
Our guest is Scott Spradling of the Spradling Group and of the Scott Spradling Band. And we're talking some state politics here. So let's just say theoretically that Governor Sununu decides to run for Senate against Maggie Hassan. Who are some of the leading Republicans? I mean, I think we can all think of one right off. Some of the leading Republicans who might want to run for the governorship.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I'm hearing three names consistently, and they're all three very strong Republican names. Kelly Ayotte has been a part of the conversation since day one, former Attorney General and former U.S. Senator. Chuck Morse, who's the president of the New Hampshire Senate, has been in position to possibly run for a number of years, and I know he's talking to a lot of his allies, and he's positioned for it. And then Frank Eveblue, the Commissioner of Education, who challenged Chris Sununu in the primary in Sununu's first campaign, he's kicking tires as well. So you've got three very different kinds of candidates representing three different areas of the Republican Party. But those three are the names that seem to be atop the list. And then Ken, to ask and answer, on the Democratic side, there's a lot of focus on the Senate again. Obviously, your very good friend Dan is atop the conversational list because he was the nominee from 2 years ago. And quite frankly, the process tends to start with the person who was last there. So watching Dan closely is what a lot of us are doing. Senator Tom Sherman out of Rye is creating some buzz. He's making noise privately to friends and allies that he's really looking seriously. Donna Soucy, who's the former Senate president and a Democratic leader, has been mentioned, and I know she's been looking at it. I don't know what she will ultimately do if Sherman runs. I think the two of them probably have to have some kind of a conversation together, but they're there. And then I don't know if you two have heard anything, but Andy Valinsky was in the primary against Dan 2 years ago, well, last year, and I'm not sure where he is on the grand scheme of things. You still have to include him on the list because he ran. So you've got four strong names on the Democratic side as well, and three of those four are very closely tied to the New Hampshire Senate, which has truly turned into an impressive springboard for candidates to go to a statewide office. Let's see, someone named Maggie Hassan and someone named Jean Shaheen have been pretty successful going out of the Senate into the governor's office and then onto the U.S. Senate.
Yeah, no doubt. And I don't know where Dan Feldes stands right now. I really don't. You know what his situation may be. So we may find out. He may commit. I don't know. But you'd have to think, though, on the Republican side, if Kelly Ayotte decides to run for an open governor's slot, that she's going to get the nomination from the Republicans. I mean,
so not necessarily. I don't necessarily agree, and here's why. And I like Kelly. She's a friend of mine. Yeah. I have a deep amount of respect for her. I think she's a good person with a good heart. But remember what happened in that Senate race. Good, bad, or ugly, she left that election cycle losing to Maggie Hassan just barely, and it was because of a guy named Aaron Day, who represents that sort of free state, far right lane of traffic in the Republican Party, and they do not like Kelly Ayotte. For her track record, for what she did, I think even despite the fact that she was helping President Trump's Supreme Court nominee move through the process and be successfully confirmed, I'm not sure any of that matters to local New Hampshire Republican voters who have hard feelings. And I still see a lot of social media chatter that's negative about her. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying she can't win. I'm saying the hardest part for her would be surviving the primary. If she gets the nomination, then I think she's in very good shape, but there's no guarantee with her. And so I don't assume anything because of some of those hard feelings. That's a growing sector of the Republican Party right now, and the Republican Party in New Hampshire and I think around the country is evolving quite a bit, and you still have that identity that is around Donald Trump, and that's a more conservative and more independent-minded and in some cases, more aggressive Republican type of voter and thinker. And I'm not sure that Kelly Ayotte fits comfortably into today's current definition of the Republican Party. Frank Eveblue does. And I think Chuck Morse can make a case that he does as well, given what role he played in the state budget. He'd be able to put his fingerprints on the things that conservatives would really very much like. That's a very different conversation, primary versus general election, and we all know you have to walk that line very carefully. But I don't even know that Kelly Ayotte would necessarily be a front runner.
So is it, in fact, the Republican Party, or is it a party of Trump? I mean, I believe in my heart that Kelly lost because she separated herself from President Trump and lost to quite a few votes because of that.
Yeah. And I don't know that you can go back again, which is part of her problem. That's why I think structurally she would have a challenge in a primary. So I think the answer to your question is, yup, it's both. It is the party of Trump right now and the Republican Party. Because at the moment, I mean, the CPAC convention down in Washington over the weekend reminded us all that this is still the party of Donald Trump. He wants, what, 70% of the straw vote for who should be the next Republican nominee in 2024. And then it was Ron DeSantis, the Florida governor, who had 21%, who was a protege of Donald Trump. So it's either Trump or Trump light right now among conservative Republicans who are looking towards 2024 and who might challenge Biden for reelection or whatever that decision process looks like. So I absolutely think this is still, for all intents and purposes, a party of Donald Trump.
You know, we didn't mention one senatorial candidate, U.S. Senate candidate, that is in the race right now, and a guy I like very much, and that's General Don Bolduc. You know, and he is officially announced that he is in the running for U.S. Senate. Any chance, Scott?
I would never say there's no chance, not at all. He has an uphill battle. He has a wonderful resume. He's a good man. He has served our country, and I think we can all be deeply appreciative of him, of his experiences, of his voice now when it comes to issues like PTSD and conversations that are important among military members and their families. He's making and has made a wonderful contribution. With that said, the same reason Kelly Ayotte may have lost her steam is the same reason Don Bolduc lost his steam to Corky Messner last time around, in that the general was not afraid to criticize President Trump and some of the decisions and some of the people. And it turned into quite an emotionally pitched fight behind the scenes between those two candidates. So Bolduc has two structural problems, in my opinion. One is, how do you woo back the Trump Republican voter who might be angry that you turned your back on them in the last election cycle? How do you reel that back in and still maintain some integrity? And then secondly, how do you make a strong case to go essentially straight from one Senate race to another Senate race and not really stop your campaign? Because he announced almost immediately after Election Day.
Yeah.
That's not the kind of tactic that sits well with New Hampshire voters. That's the kind of thing that just raises a small but definite red flag in the back of the mind of, wait, what is this guy doing? Is he trying to be a career campaigner? What do we have here? Nobody. I think everyone would agree that we all needed at least a couple days off from campaigning after the 2020 election cycle. It was exhausting. It was bruising. We were seeing the kind of intensity we've never seen before. And then here we have Don Bolduc announcing literally in the hours after the election cycle of 2020 that he's going to run for Senate. And I think a lot of people are like, come on, man, can I just take a nap first before we talk about this? So I think those are sort of some of the challenges he's got. It's possible that he's the guy. No one else really steps up. If Sununu decides not to run against Maggie Hassan and it's Don Bolduc, that is a very interesting campaign, but it's certainly a very different one from a Sununu Hassan reign.
No doubt about that. Scott Spradlin is with us. And Scott, what about Congressional District 1 and the future of Chris Pappas? You hear some rumblings that he may not run for reelection.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing. He was, you know, he obviously said, I'm not going to run for governor. But
right.
The fact that his name was in that conversation in the first place really refocuses all of our attention on this summertime and early fall conversation about redistricting and what the lines will look like between Congressional District 1 and 2. And, I mean, quite frankly, it's this simple. If they move the town of Salem from District 2 into District 1, Salem is a very well-known Republican stronghold. That's enough votes right there to turn the balance quite a bit towards a Republican candidate. It just sort of gives a built-in advantage because that's such a good, strong Republican turnout community. So it's really interesting to see what's going to happen because you've got Annie Custer, who I think is in very good shape right now. She's ready to take on all comers. She's well-funded. She's been in Washington for a while. I think she's got good roots. So I think her fate depends on what she wants to do, not necessarily who challenges her. The first CD is a very different landscape. So I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen there and whether Chris will run for re-election. I would think he would because he's only done this once. So I think I would like to see him jump back in. I think he's a good man, a good congressman, but I don't know. I don't have any particular insight on that yet, but that's another one of those cascading dominoes that in some ways starts with decisions that are going to happen around the statehouse in Concord with the race for Senate and redistricting.
Scott, we talked about the budget earlier and the pretty far-right elements embedded into it and how that can that's going to play out on the ground for ordinary folks and impact them. What are some of the other issues? You know, this week, the child tax credit goes into effect. It'll be in bank accounts across the Granite State. You know, that's going to help a lot of working families. And certainly, you know, Congressman Pappas, Senator Hassan, and others have been showcasing that and touting that, and as well they should, because that's going to really help working families. What are some of the other issues that you think are important as we go through the doldrums of summer?
Good question. I think there are two that I'm watching very closely in Washington, and then one that's happening in New Hampshire. In Washington, as we move forward with the investment of the infrastructure plan and it starts turning into projects that are happening in New Hampshire and around the country, that's a conversation that's an important one. As we all know, all politics is local, and Dan would know better than anybody that, you know, phone calls for potholes is just as important as phone calls on policy. So infrastructure is important. Everybody recognizes it. And to see that investment happening is a feather in the cap for all those who have helped move that ball forward. That's one. Another will be, over the course of the coming maybe weeks and months, the conversation about our budget, our spending, and how to pay back the investments that we have had to make for stimulus to protect our country over the last few years. We're running up a tab, and we all know it, and we have to figure out how to balance inflation with inventory and getting our economy post-pandemic running smoothly again. And I think that's one of those kinds of broad topics that people are going to pay close attention to. And then I think locally, this is one of these weird jump ball issues, the critical race theory issue. So the bill passed, it was controversial, and now it's a law. Now colleges and school districts and universities have to figure out how to navigate around this rule, this law, in what is, I think, a difficult to identify smoking gun series of examples of it being taught somewhere. I don't know what, if anything, is going to come from exercising the use of this law. I think we'll hear plenty of people as potential whistleblowers saying, I'm being taught something I shouldn't be. But it's a bizarre issue, and it's going to be a weird sort of follow-up of how you police something like that. Because I'm not convinced that critical race theory is an active component or conversation in any of our school districts or colleges and universities. There's such a thing as, you know, critical thinking, period, and having these conversations sometimes, which are very, very difficult, but you've got to have them, right? I mean, it's reviewing our history. It's reviewing current events. It's trying to have perspective on things that have happened before and that are happening now. So I'm not sure what the sort of the fallout and after effect of that entire issue will be. It's, to me, it's been confusing since day one, and trying to apply this law, I think, is going to make a mess out of certain school districts and colleges, universities, as we see these weird accusations come forward. But what happens with the law?
Scott Spradling of the Spradling Group and the Scott Spradling Band. Do you have any gigs coming up, Scott, that we should
you
know
bet.
About?
Sure. The next fun one will be down in Londonderry. It's their Old Home Day fireworks celebration on August 20th. So come on out around 7 o'clock, right behind Londonderry High School, right there on Mammoth Road, Route 28.
Outstanding. We want to see Spradling sing Sinatra. That's what I look forward to.
You got it, brother. Right. I'm dedicated to you.
Scott, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Scott.
We appreciate it.
Dan, thank you.
All right. Take care. Scott Spradling. And we are Feldis and Kale at 1039 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. We are proudly presented by your Granite State Dairy Farmers and Granite State Dairy Promotion. 1039 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. It is Feldis and Kale. Great to have you along with us. And joining us now is the executive director of the Granite State Dairy Promotion. Mealtime is milk time. Amy Hall. Amy, how are you today?
Good morning, gentlemen. I am doing well. How are you?
I think we are terrific.
We are, absolutely. And even better now that you are
that's
joined
for
us.
Sure. We went from the dynamic duo to the terrific trio.
That's got to be.
In just a matter of seconds. Right.
Great use of alliteration, Ken.
Thank you.
Perfect. I love it. I'm just off vacation, so if I seem a little scrambled today, it's because, you know, you wonder, why do I take vacation? Is it really, really worth it? Because when you come back, you sure do pay for it, don't you?
You definitely do. You need a vacation for the vacation.
That's true.
Absolutely.
Very,
absolutely.
Very, very true. But you know what? What energizes you is chocolate milk. And I know you've been drinking that chocolate milk, Amy.
Well, I mean, this week I have switched back to milk right before bedtime because milk has a small, small amount of tryptophan in it.
Yeah.
So it helps you sleep. Last week, I'm not going to lie, I drank a lot more wine than I drank milk. But this week, it's back
to the
milk.
Well, it's vacation time.
Well,
so
you
that
were
makes
on
sense.
Vacation, so there you go.
I did not know milk has tryptophan. That's the same thing that's in turkey, right?
Exactly. There's
that's why you get sleepy on Thanksgiving Day when you eat all that turkey.
Exactly. If you have turkey with milk, say goodnight.
You sleep for weeks.
No kidding.
Yeah, right. So, you know, I always ask Amy if there's anything specifically she wants to talk about on this program. And she told me she wanted to talk about the Check Your Jugs campaign.
Exactly.
And I found that to be very intriguing, Amy. So, let us know what that's all about. And this, remember, this is a family show.
Yeah. Well, see, I'm glad that you find it intriguing. You know, in marketing, you have to find these little niches and glitches and alliteration, as Dan says, that sort of catches people's attention. So that's what I ended up landing on for this specific campaign. And with August coming up, August is Eat Local Month, and I know we've touched on this previously. The Check Your Jugs campaign is an effort to educate people as a whole about how the dairy products in the dairy aisle truly are local. And you can figure that out by simply checking your jugs. And we have mentioned before that code 33. That you can see on milk jugs. Now, code 33 is indicative of the New Hampshire state code. And what that does is it represents where that milk originated from and the plant that it was processed in. So when you're in the dairy aisle, things are confusing, right? You're surrounded by various different brands, you know, what milk is local. And there tends to be this idea that local milk is what you find in a glass bottle, and that's how you support local, which is 100% true. And if you're doing that, continue to do that 100%. But even that will have a code 33 on it because it is the state dairy code. So one of the things that we want to start to do is remind people that buying local is also very easy, and it is easy as shopping in your grocery store and looking for that code 33. So that's sort of where the Check Your Jugs idea originated from, because code 33, you know, it's not as exciting or attention grabbing as Check Your Jugs.
No, it's not.
So it's one of those things, and it's sort of, you know, it's my effort to help people understand that finished milk or finished dairy product coming into the state has a very direct correlation on the continued decline that we see. Now, there are very different factors that involve dairy farm profitability, dairy farm economics, and why we're seeing so many exits. So many factors. But one of the major ones is the milk that is reaching our grocery store aisles coming in from, you know, the likes of Arizona, Chicago, Pennsylvania, Indiana, as far away as California. Those darn California cows. My dairy producers call me all the time, and they think I have the power to pull those cows off the air. I wish I did, but what we want people to understand is that while those products are good, they provide the same nourishment, they provide the same vitamins and minerals, your local community farmers have never touched that milk. it doesn't involve their product, it doesn't involve their family, and it doesn't involve their hard work and labor. And it most certainly does not benefit this state in terms of keeping our wide open, pristine landscape, taking that drive on that backcountry road and pulling over and yelling, there's a cow, I see a cow. Everybody does that, right? You see a cow and you have to declare it. It's an exciting moment. So checking your jugs for code 33 has become extremely important now more than it has ever been, because we need to keep who we have left on the farm so that we can keep our products as local as possible. And I truly do believe, and I know, and surveys have shown, that that's what people appreciate, and that is what they want to invest in. It's just so confusing when you hit the dairy aisle and there are so many brands in front of you.
And there are, and there seem to be more every day. But, you know, check those jugs for number 33. And again, tell the folks where they can find that number 33.
They can find it. Okay, so codes are usually printed near the top of the milk container. It can sometimes be on a lid, and sometimes they're printed right on the label. Now, here in New Hampshire, primarily it's going to be on the top of your gallon of milk or pint or half gallon, whatever you're purchasing. So the first part of the code will always be two numbers. Those numbers will be between 01 and 56. Codes will never start with letters. So that's the first thing that you should know. The second part of the code that you'll see after those two digits is typically 1 to 5 digits long, and that contains numbers or letters, and it might include a dash. That is the plant that it originated from. Now, that sounds very complicated, and you might be thinking, how am I going to remember that? Really just look for those first two numbers. And if you get confused, there is a website out there, and it is fantastic. It'll tell you where your sour cream came from, your yogurt, your cottage cheese. If it's a dairy product, it will tell you where it came from. The website is whereismymilkfrom.com. And there is a search portion there where you can type in that information, and it will tell you exactly where that dairy product came from.
That's great. Whereismymilkfrom.com? Is that it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Whereismymilkfrom.com. And it will work with anything from fluid milk, like I said, class 1 milk, class 2 product, class 3, so cheese. If you can name a dairy product, you can look it up on whereismymilkfrom.com. It's a really cool site.
Look it up, folks, and buy local.
Buy local. And I was thinking about you because I know I had some Area 33 milk or whatever you call it, it's 33 milk, because I checked it this morning. For breakfast, I had a glass of 2% milk and a grilled cheese sandwich. That's what
I had. For breakfast?
I did.
That's great.
I did. I love a grilled cheese sandwich for breakfast.
I do, too.
And a glass of milk.
I love grilled cheese any time of the day.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
Yeah.
And the other portion of this campaign, too, because New Hampshire, of course, is extremely important. And I know we typically don't have a ton of time here, but we will continue to talk about and address this campaign and its nuances. But Massachusetts also has a state code, and that state code is 25. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that there isn't any New Hampshire milk in that product, because plants have to do what we call load balancing. You know, so one day a Gorelick brand, which would be a code 25, may say, you know, we need some New Hampshire milk down here. And that does happen quite frequently. So I don't want people to think that it can only be code 33. So again, code 25 would be acceptable as well. Vermont state code is 50. What that is primarily is Agrimark, which equals Cabot. So Cabot cheese also contains New Hampshire milk. So the Vermont state code is 50. Maine, we all know Oakhurst from Maine, correct, out of Portland. Their state code is 23. And yes, Oakhurst Milk also has to do some load balancing, and they contain a little bit of New Hampshire milk. So it is a blended product, but it's really important for people to know what those brands are and what those codes mean. And I sure do wish in this industry that we could do a much better job of making that clear to people that it exists, and it is very easy to buy local. So that's sort of what prompted my Check Your Jug campaign. And, you know, I'm hopeful that it will work and that it will take off to some capacity.
Amy, hang in there. We have to take a quick break. It's Feldis and Kale, 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. We are back at 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Amy Hall with us from our proud sponsors, the Granite State Dairy Promotion. And Dan, I think you had a question for Amy.
Yeah, no, this is great information, especially for folks who want to buy local. Encourage everybody to buy local. We've got great dairy farmers and dairy producers all across the state. In terms of the code, code 33, is it safe to say, Amy, that code 33 is disproportionately largely New Hampshire milk, and that code 23, 25, and 50, 23, 25, and 50, likely has some New Hampshire milk. Is that a fair summary?
Bingo, Dan. That is a completely fair summary. You summed it up perfectly. See, I'm Irish. I'm Aries. I work for dairy producers, so I can talk all day long and make things sound much more complicated than that. But yes, you nailed it.
Well,
that's exactly what it means.
I'm also part Irish and also Aries, so I you know.
So 33, 23... 25 and 50.
Correct.
I'm just writing those down because I'm going to play those in Keno later today and see
33,
if they
23, 25,
That's
and 50.
It. Those are my Keno numbers for the day. So if you see me playing Keno, you know the numbers I'm playing.
There you go.
Yep. So
exactly.
So 30, but 33 is primarily the one you want to look for around here. But 23, 25, and 50 are okay as well.
Exactly. And you know, here in New Hampshire, 33 is primarily the Hood plant out of Concord.
So, okay. A
perfect example of locality here, breaking it down simply like Dan can so wonderfully do. Morrill Farm Dairy in Penacook, Highway View Farm in Bosquin, Sloping Acres Farm in Canterbury, they ship their milk into the Hood plant. That's no more than a, you know, 10 to 25 mile adventure from farm to bottle. So you really can't get much more local than that.
Well, Amy, I know this is a big month. It is National Ice Cream Month, and upcoming in just a few days, it is National Ice Cream Day.
Sunday!
That's right.
Today, I'm glad you mentioned that because it was today. In 1984, July 15th, that Ronald Reagan declared July to be National Ice Cream Month.
Well, that's one of the reasons I thought he was the best president ever. So, you know what? I don't always plug the Concord Monitor, but I will. I want you to buy a copy today because there's the Concord Insider, which is included in the Concord Monitor. Has the cover story is Dig in honor of National Ice Cream Day, we're serving up some frozen goodness. And they have a guide to all the area ice cream shops in the Concord Insider this week. So
yeah, so. It's a great issue. And then coming right out on appeals is the Hippo, who is also going to be releasing a cow to cone portion, and you know, I was really pleased to be involved with that, and you know, I was able to get the reporters connected to specifically dairy farmers who not only farm, but they make and they produce their own ice cream and have their own shop. So that's going to be a really fun and neat, comprehensive look at what cow to cone is, as well as the dairy industry.
And pick up the Hippo as well, but if you pick up the Concord Monitor, buy a Concord Monitor today. Not only do you get the dig-in edition of the Concord Insider, but you'll also inside get a picture of Feldis and Kale, too. So, you know, you can't
cut
beat
it out.
You can't beat it, can
yeah,
you?
Yeah, cut it out and put it on the fridge, right?
That's it. That's it.
Are you kidding me? Are you both really in there?
It's not in that section, but it's in the paper. Yeah, it's in the paper.
Yeah,
they put in ads from time to time about us.
Yeah, people are cutting it out and putting it in picture frames and hanging it up in the living room.
Or throwing darts at it. I don't know. One or the other. But Amy Hall, always a delight to have you with us. Amy Hall, Executive Director of the Granite State Dairy Promotion, as we celebrate Ice Cream Month, Ice Cream Day coming up Sunday. So if you go to Loudoun to the races, have an ice cream along the way or when you're leaving the track, and just celebrate. Amy, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, gentlemen. Amy. You have a terrific day.
You as well. And that'll do it. Feldis and Kale, 103.9, 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com.